Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This is the program where we expose and condemn the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, as well as with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening and what they portend for our future. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant. We will replace religion with reason. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say on today's program, is 877-300-7645. Turning to the presidential debate last night, the BBC is reporting that the most dramatic clash came over foreign policy. The attack last month on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, which left the U.S. ambassador and three other Americans dead. Now, reading from this article, I'm going to share what the BBC presented and how it's probably being perceived by most Americans, and then we're going to deal with what actually occurred. Mr. Romney sought to portray the attack as evidence of the Obama administration's failing foreign policy, and he suggested Obama had dithered over admitting a terrorist attack had occurred. Mr. Obama shot back that he had said so the day after the attack in an appearance at the White House. The Republican challenged this, saying it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror. When Mrs. Cowley confirmed that Mr. Obama had indeed called the attack an act of terror the day after the attack, the president told the moderator, "Say that a little louder, Candy." The president also accused Mr. Romney of using the Libyan events for political purposes. Quote, "While we are still dealing with our diplomats being threatened, Governor Romney put out a press release trying to make political points, and that's not how a commander-in-chief operates," he said. Let's deal with this issue, because it was the single best opportunity that Mitt Romney had of exposing the President of the United States as not only a liar, but as someone who was ill-qualified to be the Commander-in-Chief of the United States. In the days following the attack, this administration said that the attack had been inspired by an anti-Muslim film. And they went out of their way. They actually produced commercials that aired throughout the Islamic world condemning the movie. And they blamed what happened as a result of Muslims being enraged that their prophet was mocked and calling the movie inappropriate. And then, even in his presentation to the United Nations about a week later, the president again blamed the movie and then added to that, that does not still justify the kind of response, the deadly response that Muslims have had to it. Still inferring that the movie is what motivated them to act so badly. Well, the truth is that within 2 hours of the attack, the intelligence community had provided the White House with irrefutable proof that this attack was not as a result of Muslims responding to the movie. That myth that was promoted in the media and by the White House was factually untrue. That this attack was conceived by Ansar Sharia, which means Friends of Sharia Law, fundamentalist Muslims, a month or more before it occurred, and that it occurred using U.S. weapons, that it was a planned assault that had absolutely nothing to do with that movie. So, the president lied to the American people. He lied to the world on the world stage at the United Nations. He still hasn't admitted the truth. And this notion that Romney just dithered and blew this opportunity, because we as a nation have been conditioned to call Islamic jihadists terrorists, speaking of identifying people by the tactic they use as opposed to identifying them based upon their motivations, their identity, their loyalties, their purpose. If Mitt Romney had said that the White House had irrefutable proof within 2 hours of the attack that it had nothing to do with the movie and that it was perpetrated by Ansar Sharia in a premeditated fashion using weapons the United States had supplied to the rebels, then he would have told the truth. But he said exactly the opposite, and he still has not admitted that this was a planned attack by Ansar Sharia, the Friends of Sharia Law, and had nothing to do with the movie. When we use words incorrectly, when we try to define our enemy as terrorists as opposed to jihadists, instead of fundamentalist Muslims, then it becomes impossible to communicate effectively. It is like saying that in World War II we were not at war with Nazi Germany, we were instead at war with Blitzkrieg. Blitzkrieg being a tactic. That's to say, in the Pacific, we were not in war with Imperial Japan. We were instead at war with kamikazes. Kamikaze was a tactic. The reality is, in World War II, the greatest terrorist nation was the United States. We used our weaponry to firebomb both German and Japanese cities night after night, killing millions of women and children. Terrorism is a tactic. When you call your enemy by a tactic, then you have no clue who the enemy is, and therefore Mitt Romney, by being a blithering, a dundering fool, made a fool of himself and allowed the President of the United States to get by with a devastating lie. This is a devastating lie because when you blame the bad behavior of religious fundamentalists on something that someone else did, you play right into their hands. And that's what this president did. And he ought to have been held accountable. And yet, Mitt Romney was incapable of doing that. That's why I tell you that there are no good choices in this election. These men are both horrible. Now, what's also interesting is how the moderator chose not to be a moderator and chose to be a debate participant. She ought not have intervened and said, "Oh yeah, he said so." If she wanted to add something, she should have said, "What is the distinction between saying it was a terrorist attack and blaming the movie as opposed to Ansar Sharia?" That would have been helpful to help illustrate the point. But no. She wanted the world to see Mitt Romney as a fool and the President of the United States as not being a liar, even though he was. As for Mr. Romney's statements immediately after the event, not being commander-in-chief-like, well, lying to the American people about those who just killed them on an issue that is the most deadly issue of our time, Islamic terrorism, is not exactly exemplary of what we would expect in a commander-in-chief, although it is what we have become accustomed to. And yes, Romney has tried to politicize this issue because the president has been caught in a horrible lie, and particularly his vice president, where he blamed the intelligence community for the miscommunications as to what actually happened in Libya when it was the intelligence community that conveyed what happened, and immediately thereafter, and the White House that lied. This article then goes on to bring up another point. It said that Mr. Romney blamed the president for unemployment, the unemployment of 20 million, and the bloated federal deficits. America, he insisted, could not afford another 4 years with Mr. Obama at the helm, warning that Mr. Obama's policies would ultimately prove as disastrous as the Euro debt crisis. Quote, "We have gone from 10 trillion of national debt to 16 trillion of national debt. If the president were reelected, we'd go to 20 trillion of national debt. This puts us on the road to Greece." There are aspects of this that are true. There are aspects of this that are grossly misleading. The reality is that this road to gargantuan deficits can be laid to the feet of George W. Bush, King George II. He inherited a budget surplus that was not, as this president wants to claim, Bill Clinton's great economic achievement, but instead, as a result of the contract with America, the Republican congressional contract that was accepted by Bill Clinton, and he ended up assailing its author, Newt Gingrich, and taking credit for Newt Gingrich's plan. It worked as advertised. By lowering taxes, America took in more revenue, and by cutting the spending, at least the growth in spending, America went from deficits to surplus. George W. Bush inherited a $350 billion surplus. He turned it into a $1.4 trillion deficit. That's what Obama inherited. Now, since that time, all he has done is continue to stockpile trillion-dollar deficits on top of trillion-dollar deficits. And America now has gone to the point where our national debt is nearing 110% of GDP. Our gross domestic product is about $15 trillion, and our debt now exceeds $16 trillion. At $20 trillion, we will be at about 150% of GDP in terms of aggregate debt. Greece began its most horrid slide to oblivion at about 150% and is now at about 165%. We are right on the coattails of Greece. That is correct. And because Obama's plan is the inverse of what will work, Obama's plan is exactly what FDR implemented immediately when he became president, which was to increase dramatically taxes on business, taxes on the most productive Americans, and he is the one who stalled the recovery and turned what would have been a great recession into a hellish and elongated depression, using the exact same strategy that Obama is now proposing. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the commercial break. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. We were in the midst of a New York Times article in the first hour of our program yesterday. I would like to conclude that article. The New York Times had reported that the vast preponderance of the weapons that are principally American weapons that are filtered through Qatar and Saudi Arabia to the jihadists, the mujahideen that are fighting in Syria against the dictatorship of Assad are going into the hands of fundamentalist Muslims, and that the vast preponderance of the weapons are going to the very people that we do not want to have them. This is something that was inevitable. It was foreseeable. We are arming our enemy when we provide weapons to the opposition in Syria. And the reason for that is the only people in Syria that would share our values are the 10% of Syrians who are Christians, primarily Roman Catholics. And they aren't in opposition to Assad. They are uniformly in support of Assad, not because they like the man, but because they recognize that if these jihadists have their way and overthrow the government of Assad, that the Christians are as good as dead, that the fundamentalist Muslims will hunt them down as prey and kill them in accordance with their prophets and God's instructions. And so the only way for us to provide weapons in Syria is to provide those weapons to the most vocal, the most merciless, the most devoted enemies of America and Israel. It is a horrible mistake. And all we end up doing is assuring that more people die. This is a terrible blunder, and this is what this article was affirming. Let me share another paragraph or two from this article, and we have Larry on the line, and Larry can comment on it. American officials have been trying to understand why hardline Islamists have received the lion's share of the arms shipped to the Syrian opposition through the shadowy pipeline with roots in Qatar and, to a lesser degree, Saudi Arabia. The officials, voicing frustration, say that there is no central clearinghouse for shipments and no effective way for vetting the groups that ultimately receive them. It is amazing that American officials are trying to understand why hardline Islamists have received the lion's share of the arms. They're the lion's share of the fighters. You'd be hard-pressed to demonstrate that as many as 10% of those in opposition to Assad are freedom fighters in the sense of those motivated by democracy and not by the jihadist principles of the Quran. Be hard-pressed to find 10%. I don't even know if you could find 10%. And so how is it that we don't understand Islam and the fact that this is a civil war between Sunni Islam and Sharia Islam, Shia Islam, and that Shia Islam is dominant there only because America invaded Iraq and severed the relationship between Iraq and Syria, which was primarily a secular relationship based upon the fact that both nations were controlled by secular Baathist leaders. And that when America invaded Iraq and gave one person one vote, democracy caused Iraq to be not only an ally of Iran, but essentially Iran West. And therefore, the Shia influence of Islam in Iran became the dominant political and religious force in Iraq, and therefore, for Assad to survive, since his former ally had been Iraq, he now had to side with Iran. And he became nothing more than a puppet of the Iranians. So now that the Iranians control not only Iran and are free to pursue their nuclear ambitions because they no longer have a formal enemy in Iraq, but control Iraq, and now that they control Iraq, now that they control Syria, now that they control Lebanon through Hezbollah, which is headquartered in Syria, Iran has become the dominant influence in the Middle East. We caused that to happen. America did. And so now the Sauds, who have used their money to buy American weapons to be the dominant influence in the Middle East, are now in a position where they're trying to usurp the authority that they have lost, and they're using Syria as the proxy for this war. It is a war between Sunni and Shia Islam with Syria as the proxy. There is no way for the good guys to prevail in this mess. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Turning now to the affairs in Syria, where the United States is making a gargantuan blunder by providing weapons to Qatar, and to Saudi Arabia that are being, at our direction, funneled to Mujahideen and jihadists in Syria. So if they prevail, more Syrians will die, and ultimately a horrible government will be replaced by a worse government. I mean, the same thing is true in Iraq. We displaced a secular dictator who was a bad guy, but much better for the United States and for the world as a whole than the government we now have, which is loyal to and answers to the beck and call of the mullahs in Tehran. We made a bad situation worse, just as now we are doing in Syria. You don't create peace by providing weapons, particularly when the weapons are going to people who think it is their highest religious calling to kill in the name of their God. This article continues. It says that this organization is strengthening the hand of the Islamist extremist groups in Syria, some with ties or affiliations with Al-Qaeda. The longer this goes on, the more likely those groups will gain strength. No. Here's the reality. In the Islamic world, those who have strength are the most fundamentalist Muslims. It's always been the case. It will continue to be the case. The only way that the most fundamentalist Muslims aren't empowered is for there to be a military dictatorship of a secular thug. You know, in Iraq and in Syria, formerly in Iraq and currently in Syria, a secular thug is empowered by their military. But in terms of a popular support and of an uprising, the only popular support goes to the most fundamentalist of Muslims. These groups have nothing in common with Al-Qaeda other than they share the same religion. To identify them with Al-Qaeda is as stupid as Mitt Romney trying to pin he didn't call it a terrorist attack slogan on the President of the United States. Al-Qaeda is nothing but a symptom of fundamentalist Islam. They aren't an ideology. They are hardly even an entity. You'd be hard-pressed to actually find a functioning aspect of the original Al-Qaeda. They essentially do not exist. They're nothing but one of countless symptoms of fundamentalist Islam. What is it with Americans that we are incapable of identifying the only affiliation that matters in this case? The fundamentalist jihadists who are receiving the American weapons are Muslims, good Muslims, which makes them vicious people. Larry, I know you're listening to this. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, you know, I think you would be hard-pressed to find 10% of the jihadists out there that are fighting for, you know, apple pie and freedom. I mean, they're fighting to advance their notion of Islam, whatever it is.
What does Islam mean in Arabic, Larry?
It means submission.
Yeah, surrender, doesn't it?
It means submit, and it's based on Ishmael's name, which was submission. Something that Yahweh hates, by the way. He hates the idea of submission. That's why he's telling us to be upright all the time.
How does freedom and free will coincide with submission and surrender?
It doesn't. It can't. You know, I mean, one's the antithesis of the other. I mean,
if you're a good Muslim, you are surrendering, you are submitting. Therefore, you're not a freedom fighter, are you?
No, not at all. They're fighting for the advancement of submission, whatever their idea of submission might be, and it might be Shias against Sunnis, or you know. Here it is. We're sitting there, and we, as a nation, not me and you, obviously, but, mm-hmm. you know, the powers that be, decide that they're going to arm people that are going to go out and kill other people and advance their particular Islamic cause. It's a lose-lose situation. That's all there is to it.
You mentioned Ishmael's name. Yahweh made a extraordinary prediction about those who would bear Ishmael's name, which would be Islam Muslims. What did he say of them?
Well, he said a lot of things about them, but he said that they would live in deserts. He said they would live with serpents and scorpions.
Yeah, his most famous quote about Ishmael's descendants was his first. Let me tell you what he said.
A wild ass of a man. Their hand would be against every man and every man's hand against them.
A little more than that. He described what we're witnessing in Syria. He said that they will be wild asses of men. And if you look at the enraged faces of Islamic protesters anywhere in the world, it's really hard to see anything but wild asses there. Now, he went on to say, he says, they, they're, their hand will be raised against their brother, and their brother's hand will be raised against them. This is speaking of this war right now in Islam between the Sunni and Shia Muslims, which has gone on.
That literally reads their brother. It's been a while since
read it. Yeah, their hand will be raised.
That would include a brother, I guess.
Yeah, but their hand will be raised against their brothers. Their brother's hand will be raised against them, and they will live in hostility with the whole world. Ever since Islam was created, at its very inception, you've had this conflict between the Sunni and Shia. The Sunnis think that because the merchants of Mecca backed Muhammad initially, that they should be in control and have the power of the caliphate, and members of Muhammad's family, particularly his grandson, thought that no, it should be inherited like the kings of old, and so.
That's the split. The Shias also worship basically the grandchildren of Muhammad.
Right, but there aren't any anymore because there was only one and he was killed and he didn't have any offspring. So it's just simply is who's in charge. But this conflict between the two has existed for all of Islam's existence. And Islam is based upon the notion that Allah created his covenant with Ishmael, not with Yishak. Not with Abraham's son, Ishak, which is God said, I will continue to embrace my covenant with him. And when Abraham asked Yahweh, well, would you please consider Ishmael, God said, absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not is what he said. And, of course, Paul advances another theory or idea.
Right. And so what we have here is exactly what God predicted. All you have to do is read the Torah, and you will understand is what's happening in Syria and to why we can't prevail. God said they will be wild asses of men, and they are. This is Ishmael's descendants.
The only man that Yahweh ever named by name, you know this, and said he personally hated and named by name was Esau.
Right, and what did Esau do to get that?
Well, he married one of Ishmael's daughters and took her religion.
Yes, and accepted Ishmael's religion. And God said, for someone who is a descendant of Abraham to do that, this man has earned my wrath, and he is the one person that God calls out by name and says, I hate him. Now, it's interesting. In the Quran, now, I have no doubt that the Quran was inspired. Muhammad indicates the inspiration of the Quran. In fact, in the Satanic verses, he says that all of Allah's messengers are inspired by Satan. And so, in the Quran, the Messiah. You know what the Messiah's name is? Because it isn't.
Yeah, it's Esau.
It's correct. It's Esau. It's a Arabic transliteration of Esau. So this person that the Quran would tell you, well, Jesus was a Muslim prophet. Well, the actual name in the Quran is Esau, the one person God called out by name to say, I despise, replaces Yahusha.
And they call him Messi, by the way.
Yeah. And so it is so amazing that you can have a religion where the one person God says, I hate him because he bought into Ishmael's religion, Esau, and you name your second most important Islamic prophet, Esau. And no one can figure it out. And then they change Esau's name to Jesus to make it seem like, oh, yeah, we think that Jesus is a prophet, too. And, of course, everything that this Esau says is the antithesis of the life and words, the deeds of Yahusha.
So we're going to arm them.
We're going to arm them, right. Now, I mean, God said they live in hostility in the whole world, and their hands are raised against their brothers, and we're going to arm these wild asses of men who are living in hostility of the whole world. And they are. Why would we be that stupid?
I think there's profit involved. I think it's all profit motivated.
Well, I think there is certainly profit.
Why else would you do it?
Control. I mean, you have to almost get to the point where since America's leading politicians are universally doing things that are counterproductive to this country, invading Iraq, invading Afghanistan, great examples, arming the Syrians, supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and the overthrow of Mubarak.
They know what they're doing.
So you can't you can't choose the most destructive and debilitating thing for America and the West 100 times in a row and not have some motivation in choosing the wrong side. You know, you flip a coin and it can come up heads and tails. You can't be wrong 100% of the time and have it be by chance. And so you have to come up with what is the reason that the President of the United States lied and said that that the American ambassador in Benghazi was killed as a response to a repulsive movie as opposed to the truth.
Oh, by the way.
Why did he have to lie?
By the way, that's one of the reasons I called in, because you had Crowley acting as a gatekeeper for Obama.
Yes.
Last night. And even afterwards, she openly admitted that she lied. You know, she lied. And so what? She lied. It made for great theater at the time, and she got to be a gatekeeper, and you know, they didn't really want to discuss Fast and Furious. She made that pretty pretty well known right off the bat. So, you know, if you recall, a few days ago, I was talking about actually asking questions that might count, and instead they have some little girl come up with some woman makes 72 cents for every dollar a man makes, which I think they have to go back to 1969 or something to get that figure, because that is not much of a question, and it's not an accurate statement.
Anymore. Well, we're at the end of this segment. This is Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We'll be back in a moment. We are discussing what's happening in Syria, trying to help our listeners understand why there is no way for us to prevail there, why there are only horrible choices. Both sides are disgusting. We would be actually worse off if Assad is overthrown, and that's saying a lot, since he is among the most despicable and ruthless dictators in the world. Now, it's kind of like the situation with Saddam Hussein. He was a despicable and ruthless dictator. And yet the world, including Iranians, were vastly better off with him in power than the government that they currently have. And so, continuing with this article from the New York Times, that it says that American officials worry that should Mr. Assad be ousted, Syria could erupt afterward into a new conflict over control of the country, in which the most hard-lined Islamic groups would be the best armed. Guess who would be having armed them? The United States. That depends on what happens in the arms bazaar that has been feeding the rebel groups. In several towns along the Turkey-Syria border, rebel commanders can be found seeking weapons and meeting with shadowy intermediaries in a chaotic atmosphere where the true identities and affiliations of either party can be extremely difficult to ascertain. Then they have this excerpt. It says, late last month, in the Turkish border town of Antakya, at least two men who had recently been in Syria said that they had seen Islamist rebels bearing weapons in large quantities and then said that they were intending to use these weapons that they had bought and now buried after the collapse of the Assad government. So that
their footnote.
So that their militia would be able to rise to power. But what folks are just missing from this, the power in Syria isn't the Assad regime. It's not even Assad's army. It isn't, no matter how well the United States through Saudi Arabia and Qatar arms these rebels, it's not to them either. The primary power in Syria is Hezbollah. And should Assad be killed, should he be deposed, the war that will erupt in Syria will be Hezbollah, which is Shia Islam, against these armed groups of jihadists that are Sunni Muslims. And so that country is going to turn into a vastly more hellish and deadly place to live. Now, the reason all this is happening is because of Islam and the stupidity of the West and our ignorance of Islam. But it also plays into scriptural prophecy. God has told us that Islam will rise up in unison against Israel in what's called the Magog War. It's World War III. And right after a peace treaty is signed between Muslims and Israel, this peace treaty, just like the Peace in Our Time treaty between England and Nazi Germany over land that they did not control, Czechoslovakia, was the catalyst for World War II. This will be the catalyst for World War III. That's what scripture tells us.
Yeah, giving up the high ground.
Right. Now, I'm here to tell you that with fundamentalist Islam sweeping the globe, and with the Islamic Reformation that has taken place throughout the Middle East, if Muslims didn't fight Muslims for the next 10 years or so, there would be no way to postpone the Magog War to the time that it is predicted to occur. Yah is very clear. This Magog War does not begin until after the peace treaty, and the peace treaty is the beginning of the tribulation.
Yahweh has told 26, roughly.
Right, right. Yep. Yahweh has told us that he is returning in year 6000 Yah, which is 2033 on our calendar. You have to subtract 7 years from 2033, the fall of 2033, because he's going to return on Yom Kippurim, which is in the seventh month of his calendar. And so what you're dealing with now is backing 7 years, you're back into 2026. This war erupts in the beginning of the tribulation, which means in early 2027. That is still 15 years from now. So if Muslims weren't fighting Muslims as they are in Syria, which is a proxy for Saudi Arabia's version of Wahhabist Islam, Sunni Islam, against the Tehran's version of Shia Islam, then that war would erupt against Israel much sooner. So that is what's happening. That is our fate. And that is the problem with the leadership in the West, who is incapable of identifying the true inspiration for terrorism, which is Islam. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that